You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Happy Friday, everybody. My name is Mike Cutler. You can tell I am not Tom Garcia, unfortunately. Tom does a great job, but on Fridays, for the summer at least, I will be filling in for him, along with Paula Lazan, who is our co-host. Paula, thank you for joining me today.
You're very welcome. It's a cloudy day up here in Boston, slight chance of showers early this afternoon. Chance of showers with a slight chance of thunderstorms, patchy fog. Temperatures near the lower 60s today. How's it down your way?
Cool, sticky, yucky, and they're saying that there may be heavy thunderstorms up in Rockland County. But the good thing about this weather, folks, is you don't have to shovel it.
So. Wonderful. There you go.
Anyway, I wish all of you a very happy Friday. I thank you for joining us. As I said at the beginning, my name is Mike Cutler. For those of you familiar with me, you know that I am a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. And now I do all sorts of stuff trying to educate our fellow Americans about the risks that are involved with the fact that America today does not have secure borders, does not enforce its immigration laws. That's never been more true than today in particular. We'll get to that in a moment. But I want you folks to understand that this issue of immigration is not a single issue. It is a major factor in virtually every challenge and threat that confronts America today. The failures to secure the borders and create an immigration system with integrity impacts everything from national security and criminal justice to the economy, the environment, healthcare, education, and a laundry list of other such problems. And it's not a conservative issue, folks. This is an American issue. In fact, I'm a lifelong registered Democrat. I know Tom is a Republican. In fact, he ran as a candidate for Congress in Florida as a Republican. And he's a great American. And you can be a great American irrespective of political party affiliation. I only wish that our politicians understood that. My goal, as I say, is to get people to think about these issues. The First Amendment talks about freedom of the press and freedom of speech, but it also talks about the right to peaceably assemble. And at the time that this country was founded, if you were going to have a debate, if you were going to have discourse, if you were going to have an argument, you had to do it face-to-face, nose-to-nose, and toe-to-toe, as they say, because there was no technology. There were no telephones, telegraph, radio, internet, television. If you were going to have that discussion, you had that discussion in someone's home, under a shade tree, in a barn, in a church, in a synagogue, in a school, somewhere where people could meet face-to-face, and as they say in the First Amendment, assemble peaceably. Have the discussion, but show respect for one another. That's what, unfortunately, is all too often lacking. So today, obviously, we can still meet in all those places that the founding fathers and the early Americans could meet at. But we also meet on talk television, talk shows, and we do so on the internet, and we do so on the radio. And, of course, this program combines the best of both worlds, the internet and talk radio. So I'm thrilled that you're joining us today. I hope that we provide you with an interesting hour of discussion, of news, of insight, because really and truly, folks, nothing is more important than having that discourse, having that discussion, and maybe we can all come away with a better understanding of the issues. If you want to call in, let me give you that phone number. It's 310-982-4145. Let me repeat that for you. The phone number to call is 310-982-4145. When you look at the news each week, I don't know about how you folks find it, but I sometimes feel as though I am standing in front of a fire hydrant with an 8-ounce water glass trying to capture all the water, because so much comes at us so quickly from so many directions. But one of the pieces of news that I had gotten was sent to me by a number of folks over the last day or two, and it was a story about how President Obama deciding that rather than enact an amnesty bill, because he knew that he couldn't get that through, they've tried on a number of occasions to provide lawful status for the unknown millions of illegal aliens who are present in our country today. So what they did was he decided to issue an executive order telling ICE agents that they shouldn't be arresting many categories of illegal aliens, which is absolutely crazy. You know, I spent 30 years at the INS. And if we had an alien who perhaps came here and became ill or was injured in an accident or perhaps was visiting a mother or a father or a child or some family member, and that family member became ill and they needed to stay here to take care of that family member, we used to bend over backwards to accommodate them. We would take that person's immigration file and put it into what was called deferred action, meaning that every 6 months or whatever, we would revisit that case and say, okay, do you have notes from the doctor? What can you show us? How is that family member doing? Do you still need to be here? Because we always wanted to be humanitarian in our approach. You can forget about the nonsense that you hear from all these groups out there about those terrible immigration agents, you know, we're splitting up families. Quite the contrary. We understand how families work, what human beings need, and we would always try to be respectful about that. There were, of course, occasional screw-ups, to put it bluntly, but those were rare. Mostly, we did our jobs, and we tried to be as compassionate and reasonable as possible. Well, now the administration has said, no, not so fast. Before you arrest someone, here's a partial list, not a total list, because there may be many other categories that we just haven't thought of yet. And they basically said that in their memo. And you can go to my website, michaelcutler.net, and you can see what I wrote about it. Also, you can find my writings on a bunch of other websites, but most notably, capsweb.org. CAPS, by the way, stands for Californians for Population Stabilization. They do a great job out in California. But you know, as California goes, so goes the rest of the country. Illegal immigration is now a problem for each and every one of our 50 states. But, of course, California, in many ways, got to experience up close and in person what happens when you don't secure the borders and when you wind up with unknown millions of illegal aliens living in your state. But let me just quickly do this, Paul. Let me just read a couple off this list, and there's many more. I feel like Johnny Carson or maybe Dave Letterman doing his top 10 list.
Yeah.
But it's just remarkable. But they talk about if a person has a family tie in a community, if the person maybe doesn't have a great situation in their home country, whether or not the person has a citizen or resident alien spouse, child, or parent, or if the person claims to be the primary caretaker of a person with a mental or physical disability or who is a minor or seriously ill or so forth, or if the spouse's, if the person's wife is pregnant or nursing a child, but they don't even get into whether or not that mother is in fact also an illegal alien. I guess she would not be removable either these days. And we go through this whole list. If they have a relative who's in the military, well, you know, you get to a point where you say to yourself, almost anybody could shoehorn themselves into one or more of those categories. They even include aliens who are the victims of human trafficking. And I want you folks to understand something. What we've now done as a country is to make almost anybody and everybody into a victim. A victim of human trafficking, as you might think, should be somebody who is kidnapped. We see this with prostitution, where women are trafficked. They're forced to travel across international borders, and they're forced to work in brothels and that sort of thing. Certainly, they are victims of human trafficking. But today, it would appear that often the government tries to declare that an illegal alien who pays a smuggler to smuggle them into the United States is a victim of human trafficking, when in point of fact, such a person is a co-conspirator, because they've entered into a criminal conspiracy with a smuggler to get them here. Why is this important? I will tell you why this is important for everybody. America today, as you know, is suffering from an economic crisis. It's estimated that 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 American families now lives below the poverty line. It's estimated that 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 children are not getting adequate nutrition. There are many American kids who are brilliant, who are motivated, but who live in poverty. These are white kids and black kids, Latino kids, Asian American, you name the flavor of the month, because America is, you know, a multicultural country. We have people of every religion, every ethnicity, every national origin imaginable, but they are citizens of our country. And rather than having America looking out for the best interests of our citizens, there is this fascination with encouraging and inspiring and inducing more aliens to run our borders and set up shop here, which, by the way, under the law is illegal. If you induce, encourage, aid, or abet people to violate our borders, aliens that is, you're committing a felony. It seems as though the politicians of America are guilty of it, but of course, you're never going to see them prosecuted. So here we have millions of people who are here in violation of law, and I guarantee you that the people in other countries who are thinking about coming to America are watching carefully to see what America does about enforcing its borders and enforcing its immigration laws. You know, a long time ago, one of the old-timers, when I was the new kid on the block, took us, myself and a bunch of us other new agents, and sat us down, and he said, always remember something, Mike. When a cop is chasing a bad guy, the cop is running for a paycheck. The bad guy's running for his life. So the people that want to violate the law have a real vested interest in keeping up with what's going on. You know, as an agent, whether or not I arrested somebody, I went to home at dinner. I went home that night to have dinner at my house, and I slept in my own bed. That illegal alien we were chasing, if we succeeded in catching him and arresting him, he did not go home to his apartment. He wound up in jail. And back then, we actually arrested and deported illegal aliens, so they may well have found themselves on an airplane out of the country. So they could not possibly have a greater incentive to know what was going on. People around the world living in squalor and poverty, and criminals around the world and terrorists around the world who aspire to come to America to ply their trades, as it were, certainly have a vested interest in knowing what they can expect when they get here. And when people like the President of the United States and Chuck Schumer, who chairs the Immigration Subcommittee, and all these other characters, Napolitano, the Secretary of an agency I've come to refer to as the Department of Homeland Surrender, and Harry Reid, and a host of others, when they stand before those cameras and microphones and say that they want to put illegal aliens on a pathway to U.S. citizenship, that they want to give aliens who violate our borders and violate our laws a way of becoming citizens, how much of an inducement do you think that provides? How much do you think that encourages many more people to run our borders? And we're told, well, you know, these folks will do the work Americans won't do because they're hardworking and they're conscientious. You know, all around New York, the roads are in disrepair. They're finally starting to fix the roads. You look at those road crews. They're out there sweating their heads off, putting roads together. That's hard work. My dad was a construction worker. He was a plumber. I remember that he would come home in the dead of winter with icicles hanging off his hat, and in the summertime he'd come home filthier than you could imagine, bathed in sweat. And those construction workers, those road crews, those coal miners, the guys that work in the steel foundries, they're still doing that difficult, dangerous, back-breaking, filthy work each and every day without complaining. They are happy to earn the paycheck. So we hear this nonsense. Well, if you let those people, if you force those people who are here in violation of law to go home, no one's going to do the work. That's a bunch of bunk, folks. Look at the unemployment rate. Look at how many people would gladly do anything to get an honest-to-God job and make enough money that they can support their families and make their mortgage payments. You keep watching how the housing market continues to falter. Well, why is it faltering? Because as more and more people default on their mortgages, their houses get dumped on the market by the banks at cut rate prices. And as more and more people default on their mortgages and are moved out of their houses and their houses wind up abandoned, think what that does to the property value of the homes in that community. So the best medicine for America is to get Americans back to work. Now, of course, no politician would dare be dumb enough to stand up and say, I don't want to put Americans to work. So they keep talking about how I'm going to help to create new jobs. That's great. But the question isn't whether or not you're going to create new jobs. There's two questions. Are those going to be jobs that pay decently, where somebody could really support themselves on those jobs? And will Americans get those jobs? Will resident aliens get those jobs? Because when we give jobs to foreign workers who are supposedly here, at least supposedly, temporarily, their goal is to send money home to their families back in the home country. Every year, our country loses well over $100 billion in remittances, money wired out of the country by those foreign workers. More money gets moved in other ways. It gets smuggled. People, you know, buy gold or something and then ship the gold out of the country, which is why if you go to neighborhoods with lots of illegal aliens, you'll find gold buying services because it's convenient to move thousands of dollars in gold rather than thousands of dollars in cash, especially if you don't want to leave a record of the money that you're moving. So here we have America mortgaging our grandchildren's future to dump money into the economy. It's called the economic stimulus package. We've all heard it. And then you have the politicians, including the President of the United States, creating ever more incentives for ever more illegal aliens to violate our borders and violate our laws and take jobs at substandard wages under substandard conditions, thereby cutting Americans out of the potential for those jobs. And then when these folks make whatever money they do make, they send every last nickel they can possibly send out of the economy. This is money that is not earned by Americans or resident aliens. This is money that is not spent in America, and this is money that is not invested in America. For all the good that that money does, we could set fire to it. And maybe that would be a good thing if we did it in the wintertime, because then at least we'd get some warmth out of that money, because money that's wired out of our economy does America and Americans no good whatsoever. What say you, Paula?
Well, I can honestly tell you from experience that I am one of those people that has been unemployed since April of 2010. I do this here for the internet radio show as well as my other endeavor on a volunteer basis. And I can tell you since the day I was released from that position, April 1st, 2010, which was not an April Fool's joke, anywhere between a dozen to two and a half dozen applications a week, no lie, I have been putting out on a weekly basis. I am either underqualified or overqualified for the positions, but I am nowhere in between to be met. So I can understand the discourse in let's give all these jobs to the immigrants. Well, last I checked, charity starts at home, not with the old man on the street corner. So when somebody decides they want to hire me, maybe I'll have a different, you know, feeling about the way the country's being run and the economy. And, you know, I feel the same way. My husband works two jobs. I can't get a job. For whatever reason, whether it be sales or an office position. Yeah, I'm one of those people who's wondering whether or not they're going to make their mortgage payment in 30 days. We've been lucky to do that for the last 14 months, Mike, you know.
Well.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of people that they're not doing it. They're just tossing the keys and they're walking away and saying, oh, well, let somebody else handle it, you know.
Well, and what this has done is to destroy the American dream. And you listen to the politicians from both parties. You know, this mess didn't start last Thursday.
Oh, absolutely not. Nope.
No, I mean, we got here over decades. It took decades to get here. Jimmy Carter, who stood there and said that we're not allowed to arrest illegal aliens during the census because God knows we've got to count them for the census. because he understood that if you bring up the number of aliens, illegal aliens, in the towns back then that were likely to vote for the Democratic candidate, because the big cities tended to vote more liberally than did other communities, he could wind up gerrymandering, reapportioning seats in the Senate, in the House of Representatives, and in the Electoral College. So this would affect the outcome of the presidential election. Of course, all of that engineering that they did didn't work. Ronald Reagan was elected. Ronald Reagan, who wanted deregulation, and I think some regulations are ridiculous, but we need certain levels of regulation, in my view. As I've said, I'm a Democrat. But Reagan gave us the first Immigration Reform and Control Act way back in 1986. And we were told there were about a million and a half illegal aliens involved. And, you know, we would for once and for all get these folks out of the shadows. Boy, how many times have we heard about those overcrowded shadows?
Yeah.
We wound up with between 3 and 4 million such aliens coming out of the shadows, far greater number than the government told us. Just like now, they're telling us there's 11 million illegals. I'm willing to bet you that there's well over 30 million. And we wound up with fraud. We wound up with some of the terrorists who attacked our country in 1993 getting amnesty as agricultural workers when, in point of fact, the only thing they ever planted was a bomb in the basement of the World Trade Center. A guy by the name of Mahmoud Abu Alima is a prime example of such a situation.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw time and again, whether it's a Republican or it's a Democrat, for one reason or another, whether it's cheap labor or campaign contributions or pandering to a particular special interest group, what did we see? Both parties happy to see that open border with all these people coming across the border. And it's not just people coming across the border, it's narcotics. You know, I spent half my career with the Drug Task Force, 10 years with the Drug Task Force as a senior special agent. It was what we called OCDEF, the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force. I had a desk at DEA, had a desk at the FBI, and a desk at ATF. And I'm going to get to ATF in a moment. I know a lot of you have been contacting me, and you're interested about this Operation Fast and Furious, Operation Gun Runner, as it was called. Someone, being a bit humorous, I guess, called it Gun Walker, which is about right also. But I work closely with other federal agencies to pursue narcotics investigations. And for about 4 years prior to that, I was the first immigration agent who was assigned to the Unified Intelligence Division of the DEA in New York City. I've done a bunch of congressional hearings. I've locked up terrorists and murderers in my career. Illegal immigration isn't just about going after people who want to mow your lawn or wash dishes in the back of a greasy spoon diner. It impacts every industry, and it impacts national security and the safety of our communities. So I saw this up close and in person. And meanwhile, we have the food police in places like New York, and I'm willing to bet where you are, you're hearing the same sort of thing. Oh, we've got to control how much salt people put on their French fries, and kids are drinking too much soda pop. We have an epidemic of obesity. Well, we do. I think we've gotten soft, and I'd certainly tell you that I agree that we should be physically fit. It's a good thing to do. But we have another epidemic that nobody talks about.
Right. That's and not that, a big issue. Food, all that stuff about the food is not a big issue.
Homelessness, no, the big epidemic is the
drugs. People losing their houses, that's an issue. Idiotic people running the country, that's a big issue.
You bet, and there's no shortage.
And the issue of executive orders. This president is issuing orders on a weekly basis that violates the Constitution. Congress clearly rejected the DREAM Act, and Obama is implementing it by fiat. We have become a lawless nation at the federal level.
We have. And by the way, did you ever see anybody mount a campaign to talk about the danger of narcotics? I was watching Fox this morning, Paula. They're finding submarines, submersible vessels that are coming up from Colombia bringing tons of cocaine. If nobody in America used that garbage, what would be the point of shipping it here? But meanwhile, you see the politicians screaming about too much salt. I'm waiting for the day that some kid gets arrested by the food police for having a salt shaker in his lunchbox. But meanwhile, when was the last time you heard about the drug epidemic? Methamphetamine, heroin, cocaine. It's insanity. We are destroying the lives of the people that get caught up in the drug trade. I spent enough years working drug investigations with other agencies, and you would see what some of these people had become because of narcotics. There
and
was one young lady we arrested who had turned into a prostitute. Beautiful young girl. I saw a picture of her just 4 years earlier that was in her wallet when we arrested her. She had drugs in her possession. She had a master's degree. She was a teacher. She had a couple of children. She was married to her husband, and she got involved with crack for whatever reason, and she became a human train wreck. I doubt she's still alive.
Because
and in just 4 years...
It's an easy way out. Instead of going to work, working a full-time job, people go and they touch the stuff, whether it be coke or weed or what have you, and they think, this is the best thing since sliced bread. Why go to work? I'll figure out how I'm going to get my money to pay for it, but I'm not going to go to work because it's an easy way out.
Well, you know, it's just so hard to fathom because this girl threw her life down the tubes.
Exactly.
And what the drugs did to her, she was absolutely toothless. She had all sorts of diseases going on, and she was in her 20s and looked as though maybe she was 60 or worse. It was awful to see this. And nobody really talks about that, but they'll talk about how much salt is in the French fries and how much sugar our kids are ingesting with their soft drinks. And meanwhile, the drugs flow into America because, you see, I have a sneaky suspicion, folks. I believe that when you look at the quantities of the campaign contributions, I mean, $1 billion was spent, I believe, this last presidential election by all involved. This is the purchasing of America. And the Supreme Court ruled last year that corporations can give unlimited quantities of money to political campaigns. That really locks out the average American because the average American doesn't even get involved. The average American sits home and watches Dancing with the Stars or watches football or baseball or basketball. They have news stories. Look, this terrible murder trial about this young girl who was killed, and the mother is on the stand and the mother's mother, the grandmother has been on the witness stand, and the cable networks have been covering this murder trial live coverage, a single murder. Now, please don't misunderstand. What happened was horrific. It's a tragedy. There are murders committed in America every single day, unfortunately. And, you know, we just had this terrible disaster of a train wreck that happened in Medford, Long Island, here in New York, where some junkie allegedly walked into a pharmacy and just, in cold blood, shot and killed four people, including a teenage girl who was supposed to graduate from high school this week.
I read
about all kinds of crazy stuff happens, but somehow the major networks pick up on this one story. They will flog it to death. You turn on the radio. I have a satellite radio in my car. So I flipped from MSNBC to CNN to Fox News, and everybody was doing live coverage from the courtroom of a murder trial for hours. Try to get a story on about how the government is failing us. Try to do a story about how the educational system is in a state of shambles. Try to do a story about what's happening with open borders. Try to do any of those stories. You won't hear them because some news director in some network says, well, you know what? This is the story of the hour. And that's why I'm here. That's why Paul is here. You know, Paul is a volunteer, as I am. This is a labor of love for me. As an agent, I think I saw things that most people don't get to see. As a New Yorker on 9/11, I certainly saw things that I hope I never see again, and that was the September 11th attacks almost a decade ago. And by the way, I hate to interfere with anyone's sleep, but I'll tell you what I told Jim Sensenbrenner when he chaired the House Judiciary Committee. If I can't sleep at night, then I don't want you to be able to sleep at night, because all of us really need to be involved, and Paul is right. We have government by fiat. We have a situation today where people are being pushed around by their own government. Forget this idea about government by the people. That's not happening, folks. So what you really need to do, and what I'd like for you to do, if you have a pen handy, I'd love for you to call your members of Congress or call the subcommittees and demand to know what Congress plans to do about the administration usurping congressional authority. And the House Subcommittee on Immigration Policy Enforcement, this is over in the House. Mr. Gallagher is the chairman. Steve King is the vice chairman. Both are good men, but I think they need to hear from you. And the phone number where you can reach their staff is 202-225-3926. I'm sure they will agree with you, but it would be good for them to hear that you agree with them. But here's the guy who I would really love for you to call. He used to be my congressman, but I love to tell people he was never my representative, and his name is Chuck Schumer, because Chuck Schumer is the chairman of the Senate Immigration Subcommittee. Now, this is the number you really need to call, 202-224-8352, 202-224-8352, or you can try to call Senator Cornyn from Texas. He's the ranking member of the Senate Immigration Subcommittee, and his phone number is 202-224-7840. They need to hear from you, because right now, when the American people sit on their hands and don't say anything, there's a presumption that we're all satisfied with what passes for business as usual. And they need to understand that we are on to them. The Senate is supposed to, and the House is supposed to, exercise legislative authority and oversight authority. Well, what oversight are they exercising today, right now, this minute, to say to the President of the United States, you are obstructing government administration? Yes, you have the right to establish policy, but this is so wide-sweeping orders, and you're basically telling these agents that if they go out there and make an arrest in violation of this policy, I would not want to be one of those agents. I will tell you right now, I was forced to leave the agency. They booted me out for daring to testify before Congress without authority, because they wouldn't give me permission when I testified for Tom Tancredo. The very next morning, I got a certified package in the mail. I swore flames were leaping out of it, telling me that I was no longer an agent. They used the excuse that I had injured my leg executing arrest and search warrants with the FBI and the New York City Police Department. We were doing drug warrants. But the bottom line is the timing. I was removed the very next day after I dared to go to Washington and provide my perspectives on what contributed to the terrorist attacks of 9/11. So when you look at what's happening now in Washington, if it weren't for the AFGE, by the way, and everyone likes to bash the unions, don't be so quick. If the AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees, and that's an organization I had belonged to as an agent, if they didn't come forward, folks, none of us would still know what happened. So those unions, when they do what they're supposed to do, not only serve the best interests of their members, they serve everyone's best interests by being in a position where they can out the agencies that hire the people who belong to those organizations. What the people at the AFGE did, every American is in their debt for calling our attention to the lunacy. Let me give you Schumer's number again, though, folks, because I think he's lonely, and I think he really needs to hear from you. His phone number is 202-224-8352. We've beat up on this enough, Paula. What I'd love to do, and I know there's some people who had emailed me and asked about it, is to just talk quickly about Fast and Furious. And Fast and Furious, for those of you who are not familiar with it, was an undercover operation mounted by the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Agency. They used to be under the Treasury Department. They're now under the Justice Department. And Daryl Issa, who has the Oversight Committee in Congress, has been holding hearings. I watched one of those hearings, and it brought me to tears to see Brian Terry's mom and sister and cousin testify before the hearing last week. Brian Terry, for those of you who may not remember him, was a Border Patrol agent, a United States Border Patrol agent, who was killed on December 15th of last year. As I subsequently found out, that night, had he not been shot in the back, as he was scheduled to jump on an airplane and go to, I believe it was, Detroit, to spend Christmas holiday with his family. He was 40 years old, he was a military veteran, and then he decided after he got out of, I think he was stationed in Iraq, that he would join the Border Patrol to protect America up close and in person. And he became part of BORTAC, the Border Patrol Tactical Unit. That's the elite team within the Border Patrol, the equivalent to SWAT. They're the ones who go out there in harm's way and put themselves between the bad guys, the drug traffickers and so forth, and the United States. They're there forming that thin green line, as it were. Well, he was shot by a gun that wound up out there. In fact, two guns were found at the murder scene that came out of this Fast and Furious operation. Now, Fast and Furious was the code name for an operation where inexplicably, and I'm still trying to understand what in blazes the alleged leadership at ATF had in mind, because this is the craziest thing I've ever heard. And again, I've worked closely with ATF. I know a lot of those guys. They're excellent, and gals. They were allowing what they call straw purchases to be made. And what a straw purchase is simply this. A guy goes into a gun store, buys a bunch of guns. They're not really for himself. He's now planning to hand them over to somebody else. He's acting as the middleman, because the guy that wants the gun might be an illegal alien, might be a criminal, might not even be in the United States. And if you remember, Janet Napolitano, the head of the Department of Homeland Surrender, got before the cameras about a year ago with all kinds of certainty, said, we know there are guns that are going from gun shops in America, and they're going right down to the cartel. Well, guess how she probably knew it? I'm willing to bet, and Janet, if you're listening in that unlikely event, tell me I'm wrong. Did you not hear at least rumors that maybe there was an undercover operation afoot that was allowing straw purchases to buy these guns and then hand them over to the cartels where they were being used in Mexico? In fact, it was just a killing, I believe, yesterday of the family of a high-ranking Mexican official. Again, from what I heard, another one of those guns showed up. And these weren't Saturday night specials. These weren't little 38 caliber revolvers, which would have been bad enough. Among the weapons were reportedly 50 caliber machine guns, were reportedly AK-47s, weapons with sniper scopes, God knows how many thousands of rounds of ammunition. And the estimates as to how many guns really walked, as they called it, range from 1,500 and up. Now, I can tell you that every time that we took guns off the street, because we had just executed a search warrant at a drug location, and maybe we found an AK-47 or even a handgun or a shotgun or whatever, there'd be a little celebration. You would think that you were watching a baseball game and one of the team members hit a home run, because we understood that every time we took a gun off the street, that we probably saved lives. In many ways, guns are more dangerous than, let's say, a hand grenade. I mean, hand grenades are dangerous. Don't misunderstand for a moment what I'm saying. But if you pull the pin on a hand grenade and throw it into a room and you kill 15 or 20 people, that's horrific. But think how many people can ultimately die when you put a gun on the street. You know, you pull the trigger, you shoot somebody, you know, you get to reload the gun and load it up as many times as you want to keep using it. 100 years from now, folks, people are going to be dying because of this boneheaded jackass operation that they did. And the idea was, well, we'll trace the guns back to the cartel. Are you kidding? So you're taking fully functioning guns. These weren't guns that somehow didn't operate. And you say, well, when they try to pull the trigger, nothing will happen. I'd say, well, all right, that's different. No, these were functioning guns. They work. They were in perfect condition, and the cartels and the criminals got them. And I assure you that some of these guns will ultimately make their way to the streets of America, because not all those guns went south. Maybe even if some guns did go south, they may well head back up here at some point when the cartels send their thugs here to make sure that they get their money for the drugs that they peddle on our street corners. Napolitano herself has said that at least 230 American cities have become infested by members of the cartel. And, you know, on Tuesday mornings, I'm on a wonderful radio show with Helen Glover on WHJJ up in New Hampshire, up in Rhode Island. Forgive me, Helen, if you're listening. And one of the newspapers up there fact-checked me. They were upset that I said that these cartel members were an infestation. Well, I stand by that. They challenged the numbers, and I said a couple of hundred. Well, they confirmed it also. So they did something interesting. They published a story and said, yep, Mike Cutler was completely truthful and accurate. So when you realize 230-plus American cities, and I think the number may be way higher than that, by the way, because I just don't trust the numbers the government gives out these days. I don't trust much about what the government says, period. How many of them are armed? How many of these cartels are using weapons? And I'd love to know every time one of these guns that was involved with Operation Fast and Furious show up at a death scene here in the United States. And so now we're hearing that they're going to get rid of the head of ATF. And, you know, there was a song, "Is That All There Is?" That's what it makes me think about. Is that all there is? You get fired? If I did something like that, if one of those ATF agents did something like that, we would be in front of grand juries. Anybody who is responsible for putting those guns on the street belongs in a jail cell next to the thugs who use those guns to kill people. Would you disagree with anything I'm saying, Paula?
Oh, absolutely not. You have your facts, and you know they're true facts, and you know there are people out there that either don't believe it or just don't want to listen to it, and again, that's why they get into the drugs, because it makes all the other stuff go away.
Well, I guess it does, and I don't understand that. You know, I grew up in a family where I was taught about accountability.
Right.
And that's how I've raised my kids. I lost my parents when I was a kid. They had cancer, and I didn't get involved with drugs. I just made sure I worked as hard as I could at school and try to be, to do things that my parents would have wanted me to do. And I think that's what's lacking today. The schools are missing in action. Too many parents are missing in action. First and foremost, job one for anybody who brings a child into this world, folks, is to be the best parent we can be. And believe me, we all make mistakes. There's no training manual that goes with being a parent.
No, absolutely.
But when you see the nonsense that goes on, when you realize what's happening in our schools, how the schools are failing our kids, and then the parents are nowhere to be found to raise the issues that need to be raised, you understand how much trouble America is in. There is such a vacuum in America today where leadership is concerned. There's a lack of leadership in Washington. There's a lack of leadership in state halls in too many states and city hall. You know, here in New York, dingbat Andrew Cuomo has pulled New York State out of the Secure Communities program, which would enable ICE to identify criminal aliens after they've been arrested so we could remove the criminals from our midst, which is a great way of preventing recidivism. The idea that a guy who commits a crime after he does his jail time is likely to go out and, shock, horror of horrors, do another crime. Well, if you could remove them from the United States, you make it a lot more difficult for them to commit that next crime in the United States. What does Cuomo do? Literally plays politics with Americans' safety, with New Yorkers' safety. This is the kind of madness that I frankly have to tell you I don't understand. Not that they're doing it, but that we, the people, allow them to get away with it. You know, folks, everyone says to me when I travel and I do a lot of speaking engagements, this coming week I'm going to be in Washington to address a seminar, and I'm looking forward to being down in D.C. It's a great town to visit. But everyone says, well, I'm one person. What can I do? I want you to understand something. When you go to a park and you see a statue of somebody on horseback and you read the plaque, you realize that that statue was erected to commemorate what that one person did at a particular moment in history when he or she made all the difference in the universe. If you believe you can't make a difference, believe me, you'll be right. This will be a self-fulfilling prophecy. There is no telling what one person can do.
Well, can
individuals write history.
I'd like to touch upon that, Mike. You know,
sure.
You say that
one
person can make a difference. I'm not going to blow smoke up anybody's backside. I notice on Facebook and on Twitter, this incites me. People, the majority of people in this country have access to computers. They have access to their phones. How many of us have the Twitter app and the Facebook app? I can tell you, looking at the Twitter account, that the majority of the congressmen, the senators, and the representatives each have their own Twitter account and their Facebook account. Whether they're doing their own Twittering, whether somebody else is doing it for them, it's being done. It doesn't take a rocket scientist, I can tell you. It does not take a rocket scientist if it took a group of individuals from a high school to get on a page, on a Twitter page, and put their thought out to a representative or a congressman and said, look, we don't like what's going on. What are you going to do about it? And then go about their merry own way and tweet each other and Facebook each other for the rest of the day or the rest of the week. This is the mindset of this country. Everybody wants to go play on the social media. That's all fine and well, but nobody wants to be bothered with what's going on in the real world.
No, you're completely right. Look at the reality programs. That's reality. You know, when we go to restaurants, and I love using this analogy, have you ever, Paula, seen somebody walk into a restaurant and tell the waiter or waitress, listen, don't bother giving me the menu. Just throw some crap on the plate. I'll eat whatever it is you serve me. Have you ever seen that happen?
I've never seen that happen, and I would never pay for that to be done. If they don't have what I want, I'm leaving. Simple.
Right. And that's what we do. We will tell the guy we want a cheeseburger, but I don't want cheddar cheese. I want Swiss cheese. I want it medium well. And, you know, we go into pretty good detail. And if the food comes out and we're not happy, we send it back. And if that doesn't work, we vote with our feet and we walk out the door.
I'm
not a big fan of politicians. But folks, if you're not telling them what you want, if you're not telling them what concerns you, do you think that they're going to read your mind?
And
no,
honestly,
they're going to do what they want.
And the majority of the people in this country, and I can be corrected if I'm wrong on this, the majority of people, and if that's how my mindset will get, is that they're not going to hear me. They don't care. Why should I bother? But
right.
On the other end of that spectrum, social media is far and wide. Send them a note through Twitter. Send them a note through Facebook, whether it's a direct message or whether it's an at reply. Tell them how you're feeling. Somebody will listen.
Or make a phone call or arrange to meet with a staffer or send a letter or a fax. Folks, you know, democracy. Well, you know, democracy takes some work on the part of the citizenry. If you live in a dictatorship, it's easy. They will tell you, the leaders, will tell you, this is what you have to do, this is how you have to do it. If you don't comply, we'll come and take you away. That's what a dictatorship is. And if we are not careful, we will lose our democracy. We have lost almost all of our expectations of privacy and freedom that we thought the Fourth Amendment guaranteed us. Try to get on an airplane. I think I said it last week. I'll say it again. I'm waiting for the day when they merge TSA with Obamacare. So you'll go to the airport, you'll get a mammogram, a chest x-ray, and the colonoscopy before you get on an airplane. You think there's a Fourth Amendment in force here? In the name of national security, we are searched, we are poked, we are x-rayed. And if in the middle of the process you say, you know, maybe I don't want to get on that airplane anyway, they'll arrest you at this point. Is that what it's supposed to be? I remember in the months and even in the years after 9/11, they warned you that if you said certain words at the airport, they might arrest you. You know, I jokingly said to somebody, be careful how you say hello to your friend Jack at the airport, because you may wind up getting arrested for greeting Jack, as in hijack. So anyway, but you understand my point, Paula. Is this America where you have to be fearful? One guy I remember got so angry at the way they were treating him, he said, what the hell do you think? I have a bomb in my briefcase. And the next thing he knew, he was in handcuffs in the name of national security. But meanwhile, we keep expanding the number of visa waiver countries. We let people in from all over the world without a visa. 80% of the people arriving at some of our international airports, of the foreign arrivals, are people who don't even have visas. So God forbid we should slow down the flow of people coming to America from elsewhere because we want their money, because the Chamber of Commerce, the travel and hospitality industries, and now the National Retailers Association has gotten into the act. I guess for them, if a terrorist came into America, they'd be okay with it as long as they went to Times Square and bought some trinkets first, took in a baseball game or a Broadway show, and stayed in a good hotel for 2 days before they attacked us. Because by opening up our borders this way, we are opening up our borders and our country to the potential for terrorism and criminals. And that's not to say that everybody who comes here wants to do us harm. 99% of the people who get off that airplane want to just enjoy America, visit with us, have a good time, and that's great. It's good for everybody. But we've got to be mindful about that 1 or 2 or 3% that want to come here and do harm. And as homeowners, we do the same thing, folks. I wish I could say I'd like to see a show of hands. But for those few folks out there listening to me, how many of you have a house or an apartment that has a doorbell and a peephole? Well, why do you think you have a doorbell and a peephole? So that when a stranger comes to visit, they can ring the bell to let you know that they're standing on the doorway, your entranceway to your home, and you can look through the peephole and make an informed, reasonable decision as to whether or not it's safe to let that stranger into your home. That's what immigration is about. This isn't rocket science. This isn't complicated. And if you look at the categories of aliens we're supposed to keep out, it includes aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens with mental illness and they're prone to violence or sexual deviation, the pedophiles and so forth, convicted felons, drug traffickers, human traffickers, members of violent gangs, spies, terrorists, human rights violators, war criminals. That's what we're supposed to be doing. And as of a day or two ago, under this executive order, oh, yes, I know the president said that, you know, they're supposed to take that other stuff into account. But how do you know who somebody is when they run our border so they leave no record of their entry into our country? They're going to claim to be somebody they aren't. You know, when you think of somebody getting arrested by any law enforcement agency, whether it's the FBI or a police department, what do you always assume? They take fingerprints and photographs. Why? Because bad guys use false names. They lie about who they are. Could you imagine a terrorist walking into an airport and saying, yep, my name is, you know, whoever, and I know I'm on the terror watch list, but here I am. No, they're not going to do that, folks. They're going to lie. They're going to claim they're from a different country. They're going to try to alter their names. We know that the 19 terrorists who attacked our country on 9/11 in the aggregate used over 300 false identities or variations of false identities to enable them to move freely around the United States, to go about their business, to do whatever they wanted to do, and ultimately what they wanted to do was to kill a bunch of us, and they did. And so when I listen to this nonsense that we're going to do this wacky program, and I'll tell you, when I testified before Congress to show you how screwed up things are at ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and I'm going to spare this, putting this guy's name out there, but he knows who he is if he's listening to me. I spoke with a fairly high-ranking member of ICE at that hearing. He was present there for official purposes. And he said to me, why do you former immigration guys think that every criminal alien needs to be deported? Now, I got to tell you, Paula, he sucked the air out of my lungs when he said that. I mean, I've heard the argument about the dishwashers and the farm workers, and I certainly didn't get all excited when I could arrest somebody who was being exploited. It sickened me to see how people exploit illegal aliens, and I just wrote an article that appeared on the CAPS website at capsweb.org. I love plugging them because they're a great organization. Or you can go to my website, michaelcutler.net. But when you read about how farm workers are made to defecate on the side of a building and how they're given cold showers, and that if they try to escape from this hellish existence, they get beaten. I mean, it's like something out of the slave era. So, you know, I never got excited and said, wow, it's great that I'm taking some illegal alien off the street who's being exploited, but the law requires that we do this. But where criminal aliens are concerned, people who come to America, rob a bank, sell drugs, beat somebody up, commit other felonies, who could possibly be opposed to removing someone like that from America? Especially someone who works for Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And this guy said to me, you're not going to believe this, folks. This nitwit said to me, well, wait a moment. Don't you know that it costs us $12,000 on average to deport an illegal alien? And I looked at this guy, this character, and I said, well, let me understand something. You think it's better that if a guy gets out of jail for, let's say, committing a vicious rape, that instead of deporting him, we should let him stay in America, even though he still poses a threat to some other young girls who are out there, or child, or woman, or whatever? Because if he's that screwed up, you know, he's likely to do it again. That's why we have a registry for sex offenders to try to protect the people in a community. You think it's acceptable that we don't remove him to save $12,000? He says, well, we have limited money. I said, well, let me ask you a stupid question. If we don't remove this guy, if we don't put his rear end on an airplane with the rest of his anatomy, And while he's out on the street one day, he decides to attack some young girl. And because of that attack, she either winds up dead or sterile, both are very serious possibilities. Her life is finished. Her family will never be the same. She will never be the same. And then we spend a ton of money to look for him in terms of law enforcement. And then we arrest him, and we put him on trial, which costs hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then he gets sentenced to, let's say, 15 or 20 years in jail, and at $40,000 a year, what does that cost? The $12,000 seems like a relatively minor saving now, doesn't it? Do you know this yo-yo said to me, I never thought of that? I kid you not. What is passing for leadership in Washington today? The space shuttle next month will make its final flight. We are out of the space business for the next 5, 6, 7, God knows how many years, because our nation lacks the resolve, lacks the leadership, lacks the insight. What used to be mission impossible for the rest of the world was merely mission difficult for America, whether it was winning the Second World War, whether it was going to the moon, whatever it was, Americans did it and did it better. American workers still do it and do it better, but not America's leadership. If you listen carefully, you can hear the sucking sound of the vacuum that exists in Washington and in state houses around America today, the vacuum of leadership that no longer exists in America. And the solution, folks, is that you absolutely must please get involved. Is this nutty, Paula?
No, it's not. And somebody in our chat room had come up with an issue. The biggest issue in economics is almost never talked about: how to restore the creation of money to we the people. Nobody would care about immigration issues if we restored money creation to Congress.
What do you mean by money creation?
Restore the creation of money to Congress. I'm sorry. Restore the creation of money to Congress.
I guess he's talking about the Federal Reserve, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess.
Yeah.
Well, that's another interesting story by itself. But while we're talking about money, I'm going to go in a slightly different direction. Do you know that there's a law on the books, folks? And you're going to love this law. It's called public charge. If within 5 years of being lawfully admitted into the United States, if you wind up on welfare, you go home. You know, we hear how they're doing the work Americans won't do, and as I've said, the deal is they're doing the work under substandard wages and conditions, which is a nightmare for American workers. But if you're unable to work for one reason or another, and you're here less than 5 years, you should be sent home. That's only reasonable. So the laws are on the books. The problem, folks, our government is not enforcing the laws that are there. That's the biggest challenge that America faces today. And now you've got a president who has found a way of circumventing the Congress, executive order. He's done it by sending troops to, I guess it was not Afghanistan, but I know he just sent troops to Libya. I'm sorry. Forgive me for my senior moment. Without getting concurrence from Congress, what we've seen is a president, and I think this is really unprecedented because it's being done across the board, who finds ways of stepping away from the requirement of checks and balances that our government requires. What has made America so successful as a democratic republic is this idea of checks and balances, that the authority is shared among three branches of government. The administrative, meaning Obama and company, and all the federal law enforcement agencies. The legislative, which means both houses of Congress, the United States Senate, the House of Representatives, and the judiciary, which are the courts. Well, we now have a president who apparently thinks that all of those other branches of the government are just getting in his way and keeping him from doing whatever it is that he, by fiat, decides is the way that things need to be done. Boy, you want to talk about change you can't believe in? Rather astonishing, isn't it, in our country? And again, folks, I know I'm probably beating a dead horse, and I don't mean to do that to you, especially on a Friday, and everyone wants to get the weekend underway, and I certainly don't blame you. I'm sure you've had a rough week one way or the other, working or looking for work or doing whatever it is you're doing. But please, take a moment, understand just how important all of these issues are, because we the people have an obligation to ourselves, to our valiant soldiers who are out there putting their lives on the line for all of us, for our children, for the next generation and the generations to come. Only we can make that difference. The corporations and the folks with deep pockets have lots of money to throw at the candidates. Well, we are the biggest special interest group, if you want to look at it that way. There's 300 million American citizens and only 535 members of Congress in both houses. We certainly have them outnumbered. I always like to end commentaries by telling people that democracy is not a spectator sport. So I wish you folks would take it to heart. Please call those phone numbers I gave you earlier. Call Chuck Schumer if you don't have a pen handy. You can go online. Charles Schumer, he's the chairman of the Senate Immigration Subcommittee. He really needs to hear from you. He needs to understand what you understand. That's an obligation that we all share. So I hope you take this to heart. I hope that by next week you'll know that you did the right thing, and we'll be talking further about these exciting issues. I know that next week, Paula, you're going to be taking a bit of a trip and enjoying yourself, and I hope you have a fabulous time.
Thank you.
To have a person sitting in for you. Of course, they can't replace you, but they will. I hope to have someone interesting sitting in your stead, and I certainly plan to be here, and I hope all of our friends out there will be joining us. You get the last word, Paula. I'm just going to wish everybody a very wonderful weekend, and this is your moment.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here on Fridays with you, Mike. You know, we've got like I told Tom the other day, we've got another important holiday coming up to those who serving in the armed forces who came home to their families and their loved ones. You know, we're happy that you're home with us. To those of you that did not get to come home for the 4th of July weekend that's upcoming, we love you. We miss you. We truly appreciate you fighting for our freedoms and our liberties, and we're looking forward to having you home again real soon.
Well said, Paula. I couldn't say it better myself. Yeah, for all of you guys and gals out there, thank you so much for your loyal, dedicated, valiant service to our nation. We couldn't do it without you, and our country is a testament to what you have done and to what those who came before you have done. And this is a debt that we can never repay, but we can make a step in that direction by being the best citizens that we can be. Please, again, folks, visit my website, michaelcutler.net, or please go to capsweb.org. And that's it. I thank you for joining us. Look forward to joining you again next Friday. By the way, this afternoon, in about 10 minutes, I'll be on the Mark Bernier radio show on WNDB. He broadcasts out of Daytona Beach, Florida, so I'm looking forward to joining my friend Mark on his program. And meanwhile, I wish all of you a wonderful weekend, everybody. Take care. So long.
Listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.